Welcome to Wednesday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live here on Giants.com. He is Paul Dottino. I'm Lance Menno. Thanks so much for spending part of your day with us. Two ways to interact with us here on the program, 201-939-4513. That is the telephone number. You can also chime in on Twitter, hashtag Giants Chat. We'll look ahead to the offseason priorities for the Giants over the next 60 minutes. There's also a very interesting article on NFL.com that ranked the best Super Bowl, so we will discuss that, and we'll get to your phone calls as well as your tweets. Briefly, before we get into the Super Bowl topic, Paul.
Yes.
Interesting story across the NFL landscape in terms of what has transpired with the Indianapolis Colts. It appeared Josh McDaniels was going to be their new head coach and then had a change of approach and then decided to return to the New England Patriots. So Chris Ballard, their general manager, had a press conference earlier today, and they're now going to be reopening up the search and looking for a new head coach.
You know, many times, and I know that I made a comment on Twitter earlier this morning about it, John Schmelk did as well, and then he specifically addressed Big Blue Kickoff Live. You know, we tell you folks all the time, reports are reports. Now, there's no question, in a lot of cases, there's clickbait and there's fake news. There's no doubt about that. In other instances, the reports are accurate, as is the case with the Colts. You had a gentleman who, by all rights, had taken a job, and then before he put pen to paper, has decided to back out of that job. Well, regardless of the circumstances, there are those teams, and the Giants are one of them. And because the Giants are one of them, we are bound to those rules here on the program where we'll discuss people, we'll discuss items, subjects, whatever it is you guys want to talk about. But when you start making assumptions about people being in certain spots in the Giants front office, on their coaching staff, or on their roster, that's where we draw the line. And we will not talk about that as an absolute because you cannot assume. And that's why I know a lot of times fans will call us up and say, well, what do you think about, you know, so-and-so as the new offensive coordinator? Look, the Giants' policy is simple. Until the guy puts his name on the paper, ink to paper, it's not a done deal. And we've seen this over time. Bobby Kremins did this in college basketball years ago. Raleigh Massimino did it to the New Jersey Nets many years ago. This is not the first time that this has happened, okay, where a guy changed his mind within hours, or how about Bill Belichick, who changed his mind within minutes of the Jets press conference. So that's why the Giants, and I've talked to Pat Hanlon about this over the course of the years, and I've said, Pat, you know, when everything's done, you know, you've agreed, you've shaken hands, you know, you're just waiting for the paperwork to go through. Well, Paul, you know, Paulie Dott, you know, it's not done till it's signed. He's right. Yeah. He's absolutely right. And so that's why the Giants don't make official announcements until things are signed and filed away. It's official. The guy's cut. The guy's waived. The guy's traded. The guy's on IR. The coach is signed. They don't make announcements until the paper has been signed. Once the paper has been signed and it's official, then certainly we feel much more comfortable talking about said person in said position. Up until then, if you just want to ask about a name, we'll tell you what we think of the guy as a football guy. I got no problem doing that. But how he relates to the Giants, we're not going to do until the thing is done. And so that's the lesson to be learned, and it's a great example to all the folks out there in BBKL land as to why we do what we do. We're not trying to be smart, you know, Weisenheimers or anything of that nature. We simply apply the Giants' rule to all these kinds of transactions.
Well, because the door is always open for changes, as we saw here with the Indianapolis Colts. I'll give you another example, Paul. On Monday, there was a report that Greg Schiano, the former Rutgers and former Bucks head coach, was in line to be Matt Patricia's replacement in New England as the defensive coordinator. This morning, I see a report that it looks like he's going to stay at Ohio State, where he was an assistant coach under Urban Meyer. So there's another example of things fluctuate.
Again, I don't know if that's a real story that has taken a twist and a turn or if that was clickbait or fake news.
Well, it could be a variety of both. You're 100% right.
Could be anything.
It's another example to your point about how we handle conversations here on this program, that there are a number of reports out there in terms of Giants positional coaches and who's going to get what job, and then all of a sudden things drastically turn and go in a different direction a few days after the fact when the team announces what's official. So that's another example. That's why I'm bringing it up, where fans see that content and then a few days later it turns out that that was just simply a report. There was no validity behind the report.
Yes.
So you always need to be careful in terms of what is official versus what is speculative. And this is another example of what we saw transpire with the Indianapolis Colts.
We could subhead our show Dragnet, just the facts.
I think that's a fitting title in terms of our approach to this program, but just thought we'd bring that up to show as another example of how things can drastically change from minute to minute and hour to hour when it comes to the National Football League. And that was an interesting story that emerged last night. We also mentioned in terms of greatest Super Bowl, so NFL.com put up on its power rankings page, and this was by Elliot Harrison. He ranked the top five Super Bowls of all time. His number five Super Bowl was the Giants-Bills, in which the Giants beat the Bills 20-19. Number four was Patriots-Seahawks, the one that came down to the wire with Malcolm Butler getting the game-sealing interception, 28-24 in favor of the Patriots. The third one was the one that we just saw on Sunday. Eagles outlasted the Patriots 41-33. Then he has Giants over the Patriots 17-14, the first one in 07. And then his greatest Super Bowl is Steelers over the Cowboys 35-31. As that was Super Bowl 13, and his argument was that it involved over 20 Hall of Famers, so he took that into consideration. That's why he put that as number one. Let's say this. There are a number of Super Bowls that you can easily make a top five list out of. I'm not saying that he's completely wrong and he's out of whack. This is his personal opinion, and he's entitled to that. But I think that you could take a few others, and you could certainly make a case that they deserve some consideration in the top five. And it also depends on what your criteria is. I think that's a big thing. And we were talking about this a little bit off the air, Paul, before the program. Are you taking into consideration history? Are you taking into consideration excitement? Are you taking into consideration a competitive affair, meaning it went back and forth? Are you taking into consideration a dramatic comeback?
Level of play?
Yeah, I mean, all of those things, it depends on what you're looking at to define what you think is a top five Super Bowl.
Well, I think what happens is when you get into the top five Super Bowl question, you actually have to make it about six different questions specifically addressing the type of adjective that you want to use. You know, the most historic Super Bowl of all time is Joe Namath in Super Bowl III beating the Colts because it prompted the merger. And as much as I'd love to tell you the Giants beating the undefeated Patriots would be number one on that list, it's not. It's number two. You have to consider the fact that the AFL and NFL was forced to merge after Namath beat the Colts. You have to put that number one. And you have to put the Giants beating the 18-0 Patriots, number two.
From a historical standpoint. Yeah.
Historical. There's just no getting around it. That's one and that's two. Historical. And then everything else is a deep third. Okay? But I'll give you a great example. I'm tired of hearing people tell me that the Falcons-Patriots Super Bowl of the previous year was a great game. It was a horrible game. Horrible game. Greatest comeback ever, without question.
But that doesn't necessarily make it a great game overall.
Was not the quality of play.
Well, the first half was lopsided.
It was terrible.
Yeah.
Now, I would say this. He's using the words.
He says my top five.
Top five based on the quality of the game and its legacy. I have a problem. I have a problem putting the Giants-Patriots from Super Bowl 42 second to Super Bowl 13 when the Steelers beat the Cowboys. I get the fact that he's saying highest scoring affair of the era with over 20 Hall of Famers on the field and on the sidelines. I get that. Great game, obviously. Come on, Steelers and Cowboys had two terrific Super Bowls in that little small time frame there. But the Giants-Patriots game in Arizona was a very well-played game. It was never, ever, at any time during the course of that game, in doubt, in terms of the drama, Because
nobody pulled away in that contest. Yeah.
Every possession, every play, every series, every first down, every punt, because you weren't sure if it was going to alter field position and that was going to set up somebody to score. That was a nail-biter from the very first whistle right to the very end, even when Tom Brady tried to hit Randy Moss for two bombs down the left sideline. The quality of play in that game, and it had its share of Hall of Famers. All right, let's not kid ourselves. Seau, Moss, Brady,
Strahan,
Eli Manning, Tom Coughlin. I mean, those guys will be there.
Yeah.
That's, you know, I know it's not 20 Hall of Famers, but consider the quality of that game, the finish of that game, and the historical significance. As we've said, it was the number two most historical significant Super Bowl in history. You know, the Jets-Colts game was a pretty good game, too. Pretty well-played game. It wasn't like that ever got out of hand. But that game did not match in terms of overall play by both sides compared to the Giants-Patriots game. So that's where I'm going to lift that one higher. But, you know, you could certainly name a number of different lists based on criteria for this this question.
Well, and then if you're going to take into consideration quality of the game, as he says it, I mean, I'm not necessarily putting Eagles-Patriots on this list then, Paul. I mean, I don't think that would make my top five. I mean, both teams gave up over 1,100 total
yards. There
was
no defense
in
the
game. That's
what I'm saying.
So that's an example of, yes, it was a competitive affair. It was exciting. It was good to watch. But quality of play, hard to make a top five list
best
based on that.
Video game Super Bowl.
Well, yes, that would be a separate category, and I would agree with you, because it was.
Techno, right?
Should be called the video game Super Bowl. Whatever you want. Whatever video game console you want to put out there,
absolutely.
It's fitting in
and
terms
that,
of that.
For that, absolutely. Make that game number one.
Yeah, because I would put Patriots-Seahawks ahead of Eagles-Patriots, because I thought the Patriots-Seahawks game was much more competitive from a defensive-offensive standpoint. I'm referring to the game, obviously, that came down to the wire with the whole Marshawn Lynch controversy. And then, you know, Giants-Bills was also a high-quality, well-played football game as well. So
you know,
I'd put both of them before the Eagles-Patriots if you're taking into consideration his criteria.
I remember as a kid watching a nail-biter between the Colts and the Cowboys. Remember when Jim O'Brien had the last-second field goal to beat the Cowboys, and Chuck Howley was the losing team game MVP. That was a huge deal.
I thought you were going to go back to when Frank Gifford played against the Colts. That's what I
thought.
Well,
but that wasn't a Super Bowl.
Well, I know, but, you know, the NFL championship. I thought you were really going to
give us a historical lesson.
So.
But yes. I mean, here was the Super Bowl in its infancy, okay? You had Namath beat the Colts in three. Then you had Tank Stram and the Chiefs just lay a whipping on the Minnesota Vikings. And then you had this Baltimore Colts game where, you know, Earl Morrill had to give way to Johnny U. Oh, no, it was the other way around. I'm sorry, it was the other way around.
Well, that was, hold on, what year was that?
That was number five. It was number five.
Let's see. You had, I could bring up the box score. I have them all in front of
me. It was number five.
So we could take a look at the exact matchup that you're referring to. Let's see.
And
Earl, you're right, for Baltimore. Craig
Morton,
both
of them played.
Yep.
Earl and
Johnny
both played.
He had nine pass attempts in that game, Unitas.
And then Jim O'Brien, who, by the way, was a wide receiver / place kicker, who later in his career, after he was cut by the Colts, actually was in Giants camp, was with them for a preseason. And he ended to that point what was the most dramatic Super Bowl in the history of the game. There was only five of them at the time.
Yeah, so small samples.
With the last-second field goal. He was a straight-on kicker, and he beat the Cowboys. And, you know, that, you know, at the time, you know, people were saying, well, how are you ever going to beat this? You know, last play, field goal.
Little did that individual know that there was a lot more history on the
horizon. Adam Vinatieri.
Yeah.
You know, he's done it. Norwood
for the opposite reason.
In the other direction.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah. No, there's been a number of,
you know,
down to the wire. And not just necessarily field goal kickers, but, I mean, think about a few games that come to mind that were like an inch short of determining whether or not a team was going to win or lose. I mean, Tennessee, the Rams, that to
Dyson.
Me, I mean, that game also should have made this top five list.
He's within about a foot and a half of the goal line.
Yeah, I mean, if Mike Jones doesn't make that tackle,
I know
history changes all of a sudden.
Kurt Warner doesn't get that ring.
Yeah, it's amazing how things like that, you know, don't necessarily break through compared to the Eagles and the Patriots. And, you know, this is why I always have an issue in terms of rankings, top five lists, this
no
and
doubt.
That. Because you need to put things in perspective when you're going to make a list like this. And I think it's so simple after you watch Eagles-Patriots. Oh, it was a great game. Brady had an opportunity on a Hail Mary. You know, let the game breathe. You know, relax. Doesn't have to now go to the top of the list just because it was the most recent Super Bowl.
It's critically important, if I can use a double word there, to identify specifically, if you're going to say it's the greatest, okay, break it down as to why. Use an adjective here before you give me your list because, and you know, we invite the callers to get in on this. If you want to get in on this, I've got no problem talking about it, but you got to be, I think, specific.
The criteria. Yeah.
Because it just changes the entire conversation, and that's why people are going to have arguments about this, and then it's going to be, well, like, why did you say it is? Well, if you listen to the guy and understand his criteria, maybe you agree with him, and you wouldn't have the argument.
Yeah.
But you got to get the criteria established first.
I think that's only the fair way to have this debate. You have to set the criteria specifically to where you want to take it as opposed to just say greatest Super Bowls ever. Well, everybody's going to come up with their own varied arguments over that type of criteria. So, therefore, you have to be more specific when you have these types of conversations. All right, with that being said, let's open up the phone lines. 201-939-4513, hashtag Giants Chat on Twitter. We've got Antonio in New York. Antonio, what's happening?
Hey, what's going on, guys? Just wanted to touch base because I just finished hearing this morning the conversation that Paulie D you guys had with former coach Bruce Arians and
John was with me yesterday. Sure, go ahead.
John. It was just really interesting that he pretty much hinted that we need a lot of help on the linebacker side, and you know we need faster linebackers. So that's just like kind of a evidence right there that we just need, you know, this draft. We need depth. We need depth at a lot of positions, and I just don't see how the Giants can rebuild in 1 year to be competitive next year. So I think it's gonna be like a 2 year process for us because you know we have all these superstars at certain positions and we have really good players, but the behind them there's nothing there, and I feel that's you know I thank Jerry Reese because he did a great job. He got us two rings. The first ring wasn't his players, but he was in the scouting team, so he was here. Mm-hmm. But we just don't have depth, and that's what scares me. And the Eagles just look like they're about to be a really dominant force for years to come. But then again, the Giants were supposed to be dominant this year, and they didn't turn up. So you never know what happens next year. And that's all, you guys. I'll take it from off the air. Have a good one.
All right, Antonio. Appreciate the phone call.
Antonio, did you know that 15 of the previous 51 Super Bowl champions did not only failed to defend their title, but did not make the playoffs the following year? 15 of 51. We now have a 52nd champion. We will see where the Eagles land at the end of the upcoming season. 15 out of 51. To some people, that's probably a very high number. To others, maybe not so much, but it's a legit number.
I don't think it's surprising because we talk about the state of the NFL overall. Things happen.
Come on.
Well,
pay
up. Listen, we said
pay
it the up. Other day. I'm not even going to say it anymore.
No,
because
say
I'm not gonna,
it and pay
I'm not
up.
I'm not going to owe it to you. I'm not going to owe it
the
to you.
The quicksand of mediocrity.
I was going to. My term is parity. And, you know, we talk about this all the time, Paul. Things fluctuate so much in the National Football League. So, you know, when you look at a team that's coming off a Super Bowl victory, and the Eagles are in really good shape, to the caller's point, because I believe 21 of their 22 starters – between offense and defense are under contract for next season.
Yes.
Which means you feel as if from a stability standpoint, that team is going to come back intact, but things are going to change in terms of the depth chart. You don't know how injuries are going to play out. And given there's so much unknown, that's more of a reason why nobody could pencil themselves into the playoffs the following year because we just don't know how the season is going to play out. The Giants, do they have work to do in terms of building up the depth chart? Absolutely. But let's see how free agency plays out. That could make some inroads to determine then what they want to do in the draft. And then sometimes young players tend to exceed expectations. We've seen that a lot, where you don't think that a rookie's going to come in and do a lot of heavy lifting, and then all of a sudden it happens. I mean, case in point, B.J. Goodson, I know he got hurt, so it's not necessarily the ideal example, but Goodson was on pace, if he stayed healthy, Paul, to, I think, have an extremely impactful season. Mm-hmm. Fortunately, the injury bug got the best of him, and he wasn't on the field more often than not. But we've seen young guys, they come in, they adjust well, and they perform. So, you know, a lot of unknown with the Giants at this point to determine what is possible and what is impossible.
Look at it this way. When Ray Hanley had been done with his two-year stint with the Giants, and it was an absolute mess, they underachieved terribly because he did a very poor job of handling this club. They brought in Dan Reeves, and immediately they were an 11-win team, and they went to the playoffs right away. Dan Reeves walked into the building, and that was it. It was all fixed just like that. I know it was different, salary cap, different.
Different rules.
Most of the same guys on the team. I get all that. But the coach can have a dramatic impact. Let's not forget the Jaguars won three games last year, and this year they were a bona fide Super Bowl contender.
Yeah, Rams are another good example.
Rams are another great example of that. And, oh, by the way, the Eagles escaped twice against the Giants this year. So you want to take some heart in that. I know matchups have a lot to do with it, and I firmly am a guy who puts a lot of stock into matchups. But the vaunted champion, Philadelphia Eagles. Was that any good? I tried to be.
I just can tell how painful it is for you to say that statement.
Well,
but anyway.
But,
yeah.
You know, yes. Merrill Reese. Little.
I tell you, we got a Pat Hanlon impersonation on this program. Now we got a little persona in terms of the Eagles announcement. Go ahead. I don't know what's up your sleeve for the next remainder of the
point is, for as great as the Eagles were, they got by the Giants twice by the skin of their teeth.
Well, and that's the nature of most championship teams, though. You're going to play.
Just saying.
You're going to play
but
a lot of close games.
But it
so
wasn't
I
just,
don't know if that's
but
necessarily
But it wasn't
anything.
Just once. It wasn't like they hammered the Giants in one game and the other game, you know, they didn't play
they were
well.
Both similar.
The Giants were lucky.
Yeah.
No. Both times, the Giants gave them you know what. Both times. Skin of their teeth. One game, they needed a 61-yard field goal. Come on.
But my argument to that would be, listen, it's divisional rivalries. These teams know each other. To your point, the matchups play a role.
All I'm saying is, so I'm not scared of that team.
Well, I'm not saying that you should be scared of them, but I guess I don't look at a championship team that's just coming off a Super Bowl and the fact that they played a few close games in their division against teams that were inconsistent, that's a sign that all of a sudden they're not due to make the playoffs again next year. I guess that's what I'm arguing.
I'm not saying that they're not going to make it either. I'm simply saying that to automatically give them a division title and a chance to win the Super Bowl again next year, automatically, when we sit here the first week of February.
Nobody's in that position to get anything automatically.
I think a lot of the people south of this turnpike would like to think that.
Well, listen, you know, everybody's entitled to their opinions, but like I said, I don't think
everybody's 0-0 already.
Correct. I mean, other
0-0, baby.
But let's face it, other than the New England Patriots, who have been the poster child of consistency in the National Football League, who else is really feeling good about penciling themselves into the playoffs
every
single
especially
year?
Now that the Packers failed this year? Because they had a run of 6 in a row.
I think it was even more than that.
Was it even more?
I understand where you're going with that.
I mean, they were the NFC's version, if you will, in terms of being able to get to the postseason year after year after year after year. And even that fell apart when Aaron Rodgers got hurt.
So nobody can assume anything. The whole point is you want to keep your roster intact as much as possible. That's always a goal. But it's difficult to do with the salary cap restrictions. You also pray that your team stays healthy. That's obviously a number of factors that play a role in that, but it's a key. And then I would say that the third component that could lead and contribute to consistency is being able to execute as well as you did the previous season. I mean, let's face it. You go back, the Eagles won a lot of close games if you watch what transpired this season, but more often than not, they found a way to close out a game. And with the Giants, what's the biggest difference, Paul, between 2016 and 2017? This team played a number of close games, too, at times. Not every single game. There were some close games. And they were not closing out the games in 17 like they were in 16. So that leads to inconsistency. That leads to the flip of a record. if you avoid the inconsistency and you close out games as effectively as you did the previous season, then, yeah, your chances of getting to the playoffs are going to increase immensely. Mm-hmm. So those three factors to me are things to watch for the Eagles and at the same time things to watch for the Giants. But remember, the Giants are coming off the opposite end of the spectrum. They want to get to where they were in 2016 in terms of their efficiency and execution. Let's head back to the phone lines. Dilly is in Jersey. Dilly, welcome to the program. What do you got for us?
It's not Dilly. It's Billy. Why do you guys do this to me, man? It's
well,
Dilly.
Listen, we will tell our screen caller to clean out his ears, but I'm only going by what I got on screen here. So my apologies in terms of butchering of the name. What do you
Hello.
Got for us? Yes.
Lance, Paulie, how are you guys doing?
Doing all right. What do you
all
got
right.
for us?
Good deal. Hey, I was watching the show the other day. Hey, Lance, Paul gave you some great advice, man. Never take it personal, bro.
Who was taking anything personal?
Someone come at you, but boy, you were so steam. I thought you were going to hyperventilate.
I wasn't taking anything personal. It was simply a disagreement in terms of people who know the rules or think they know the rules. That's all it was. So, as Paul and I mentioned at the top of this program, factual. Mm-hmm. Information is priority number one on this program.
Without a doubt.
So when non-factual information is given and statements are made that don't have any backing, then it's our duty as hosts to counter that and provide as best of factual information as we can. That's simply what it was about.
I agree with you on that, but the thing of it is, you can't take it personal. You were about to hyperventilate.
But that's your personal take. I was not taking it personal. I slept very well Monday night. I woke up Tuesday morning. I had breakfast. I went through my routine, and I am perfectly fine. And I wasn't even thinking about Monday's program until you brought it up. So you could claim I took it personal. I promise you. I didn't even think about it after I left.
This show, I'm looking at you. I'm like, oh, my God.
All right, listen, you're entitled to your interpretation.
Hey,
like I said, I'm not going to deprive you of that.
The caller is worried about you.
Well, I'm telling you, I'm fine.
All right.
The minute I left the program, I was fine.
Thank him for his concern.
I thank you for your concern. There we go. Yes.
Yeah, I like you a lot, man. I don't want you to have to because you hyperventilated. But anyway,
I appreciate you looking out for me.
Yes.
But I'm telling you, I'm fine. Yeah.
Hey, Paul, I called during the season, right?
Yeah.
I'm the guy that said that you need to speak with Mr. Mara about working with the scout team, stuff like that. You know what the hell you're talking about. I'm that guy. I'm also that guy that accidentally gave you John's baby. I called back and apologized for that, too. But anyway.
It's all right.
John's baby. I accidentally gave you John's baby, remember?
Go ahead.
It was one of the short calls.
All but good.
Anyway.
It's all good. It's all good.
Okay, check this out. I made a statement about the Cowboys. You know, I said something about them drafting Zeke, and they brought old school football back. And you kind of agree with me on it. And I said, you know, Dak Prescott is not as good as everybody thought he was. It was because he had an offensive line and a good running back, a great running back. You see what happened when he fell off the map, right? All right.
Okay.
My point, what I'm trying to make is, I don't think people is being fair to David Webb. I really don't.
They're not. They're not. His critics are not being fair to him, I'll tell you that.
I think that guy is going to be a hell of a player if he's just given the chance. And I also believe we can get two more years out of Eli if Mr. Gettleman soars the offensive line during free agency. Not during the draft unless it's like this maybe late second or early third or something like that. But Paul, I really do believe that they should take Mr. Barkley. I'll tell you what, man, he's a generational player, man. And if you bring that guy in, all right, I think that will help protect Eli for another 2 years if they can just get. I mean, I think with the offensive line we had last year, we bring in Barkley, we'll do well. I really do believe that. Okay, bring Barkley in.
Okay.
Don't draft a freaking quarterback because I think Webb's going to be fine. The guy's smart. He's ambitious. He's working hard. He's already in the system, like you said. He's already there. Okay, draft that running back and just go with Webb. Just sewer up the offensive line and the defense, the linebackers, and take it from there. What do you think on that?
Well, you know, I'm trying to explain to some of the critics here that if you understand that Shermer and Gettleman are committed to Eli for this season, at least, and maybe even 19, we don't know. That's going to have to play out over the course of time. But if you believe that they're going to try to execute the quick turnaround that John Mara has asked for, and Eli's going to be the guy at the controls, well then, you know what? Chances are, Davis Webb at some point in the next year or two will get a few opportunities to get into a game, okay? Because there's no rush or hurry to get him in there. You know, if Eli is the guy who's going to drive the truck, and so he's got even more time to develop. I mean, I'm telling you, I already think that the guy's got tremendous potential, but he will have additional time beyond the year he's already had to learn behind Eli Manning. And he will probably get some cameo appearances during the 2018 or 19 season. And by the time they need to hand him the ball, he will be prepared. I mean, it's not hard.
You know, I agree with you. But you don't think they should bring in Barkley?
Barkley, I've said this before. My first preference is to trade the picks to get a shopping cart load to enhance their chances of turning this thing around within the next 2 years. Short of being able to make a deal, Barkley would be a heavy consideration for me at number two, again, with the assumption that they're going to do some things in free agency to impact the offensive line first.
I agree. 100%. All right, man. Hey, thanks for taking my call. I'm going to take the rest of you guys' comments off the line. Hey, Lance.
Yeah.
Hey, listen to Paul, all right? You're my boy. I like
all right.
I think you're one funny character, man. I really do.
Well, I appreciate
you get
that.
On Charlie. You kill me when you get on Charlie.
Well, I'm glad you enjoy that, and we appreciate you tuning in. I appreciate the phone call. But once again, I can't emphasize it enough. I was perfectly fine following Monday's program. I have no issue.
Thanks for calling.
Long term, but thank
call
you for
again.
Weighing in. In terms of Barkley, you know, the one thing I'll continue to throw out, Paul, I know we've had these conversations, and I understand people like to speculate, but what Cleveland does in free agency could very well dictate whether or not they go after him with the number one overall pick. I can't rule that out at this point. I feel as if everybody's operating under the premise that Cleveland's taking a quarterback. If they go out and they sign Kirk Cousins, then
you're right.
Barkley, to me, is in play for them at number one.
What about taking Barkley at one and taking a QB at four?
Yeah.
They could do that, too.
Of course, another option, because there's so many quarterbacks that if they don't feel there's a huge separation between all the QBs, Paul, you take Barkley at one, and then you wait at number four for a quarterback. So the one thing I'm going to continue to throw out is we can't assume that when the Giants pick at number two, Barkley's definitely going to be on the board. That's my point.
This is why if you're going to agree with my strategy of trying to compile the picks, that trade might not happen until the very last minute when the Giants are on the board. I mean, let's be very clear about this.
Yeah.
They may not only need to see how free agency pans out, but they may also need to see who the Browns take at number one. And maybe, just maybe, the Browns take Barkley number one, and all of a sudden, now one of those quarterback desperate teams says, hey, wait a minute. Now we have our pick of any of the quarterbacks, calls up and says, hey, Gettleman, guess what? You want that extra three?
Now we'll give it to you.
We'll give it to you now.
Correct, what Cleveland did at one. Yeah.
And all of a sudden, the Giants' phones are literally smoking on that draft room table. And they've got a great opportunity to squeeze somebody for as much as they possibly can before the card goes up to the table.
Let's head back to the phone lines. We check in with Sean in California. Sean, what's happening?
Hey, what's going on, guys? Can you hear me?
I hear you loud and clear, Sean. What do you got for us?
Hey, what's up, Lance? What's up, Paul?
Hi.
It's funny because you guys kind of covered everything I wanted to talk about. As far as the draft goes, at first I wanted to point out the Super Bowl. I didn't enjoy the outcome of the game. And yes, it was like a video game football, but I have to salute one player in that game, and that's Nick Foles. His ball placement was unbelievable.
Yeah.
You know, at times he had like WTF moments, but other than that, I mean, like, his ball placement was phenomenal, and with the help of the receivers, that kind of helped him. But that one play where he threw it, I believe it was Jeffrey, where there was like two defenders on him, that was perfect ball placement. That was an elite quarterback right there, and I'm just hoping that he gets his chance to start. I honestly think he's going to the Cardinals, and I think Kirk Cousins is going to Denver. As far as the Browns, I was real high on getting Barkley, and now that, you know, listening to the show and kind of doing my research, I think he's gone at one. I don't think the Browns pass him up. The Browns have Deshaun Kaiser, and I don't think they're really in need to rush in. The only reason I see them taking a quarterback is if they're scared that we're going to take that guy. But other than that, I think they kind of grade them all the same, and I think they'll take Barkley and come back in the fourth pick and take a quarterback there. As far as for us, if they take Barkley, I don't think we should take a quarterback. I'm a big fan of Davis Webb. I never expressed my feelings on him, but I think a lot of us are forgetting that Davis Webb.
Go ahead.
We're listening.
Yeah. Sorry. Davis Webb is everybody forgets. The guy wants to be an NFL coach. The guy draws his own plays in his side book. The guy wants to be offensive coordinator. He said, coming out of college, I was watching a lot of videos on him. He said that I want to play NFL quarterback, then I want to become an offensive coordinator, and then I want to become a head coach. For a guy to think like that, and he's not even a starter yet, it tells you something about him. And for a guy to drop his own plays, I know probably a bunch of quarterbacks drop their own plays. But for him to say that on camera and reveal that to the world, it just shows his grind and his motivation to actually become successful in the NFL, player and not player. And that's why I'm looking at free agency, I'm looking at the draft, and I wanted to trade up, and I don't think if we take a quarterback, I wanted to trade up. But there's one guy that I'm thinking that we could get at two, and he's not going to be there at five, at six, because I believe if we don't get him, the coach is going to get him. Raquan Smith out of Georgia. We need a linebacker. I mean, the last time, when's the last time he picked up early number two? Didn't we get when's the last time he'd been this high?
Well, Lawrence Taylor, right. Sean, is the last time. The last time the Giants picked number two, they drafted Lawrence Taylor. Right. So you're going back.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly, right? So, like, I knew the answer. I just wanted to have you guys say, don't you guys think, I mean, like, he's rising a lot in mock drafts. The combine never happened yet. There's a lot of offensive lines we can go after in free agent. There's a lot of offensive lines that we can go after in late picks. I think some Giants fan might say that's a reach at number two, but he's not going to, the Colts are going to take him if he's not there. Like, if we don't take him, he's gone. By the time we come back and we try to pick an eighth or whatever we trade for, because I honestly think if it's not a quarterback, if it's not Barkley, it's Raquan Smith. Other than that, I'm trading up. I'll take you guys' answer off the air, and thank you for accepting my calls.
All right,
it's always been great. Giants for life.
Appreciate the phone call. First of all, Nick Foles is not a free agent.
Correct.
So you can't assume that he's going anywhere. He signed a 2-year deal with the Eagles. If he leaves, they'd have to trade him or outright
release him. They should not trade him.
No, of course not, because first of all, you want to see that Carson Wentz is healthy. And with Wentz going down, why do you think the Eagles won the Super Bowl? Because they had a polished veteran quarterback behind him. So don't assume that Nick Foles is leaving. That's number one. In terms of where the Giants may go with the number two pick if they want to go at the linebacker position. First of all, we got to see the combine, because, you know, you could read rankings right now, Paul, and they're going to just twist and turn for the next few weeks as we get closer to the draft.
Well, if the Giants are going to fortify the offensive line, that's got to be something they need to do in the first three rounds. All right, maybe even taking two in the first three picks. Okay, remember, it's likely, it's expected, I'm not going to go definitive here. The experts seem to believe that the NFL's formula is going to give them an extra fourth-round compensatory pick because of Jonathan Hankins signing with the Colts.
And Newhouse, too. I mean, you take all that into consideration, obviously.
So now, that's five picks in the first four rounds they should have. Now, my understanding is there are four rounds of make-it outside linebackers in this draft. That's good for the Giants. It's a deep position. So they don't have to go necessarily first or second round linebacker if they don't want to. The problem is the defense that Betcher wants to emphasize and implement puts a heavy burden on the back seven. There are not very many make-it safeties in this draft. So for him to be able to do all the machinations that he wants to use, he's going to have to get a bunch of linebackers through the draft, and if they need any additional safeties, they're probably going to have to come through free agency. Just saying.
Well, and we'll see what the Giants choose to do, remember, with the existing linebacking core. I mean, are they going to consider bringing back? We mentioned there's four linebackers, Paul, that started at least three games apiece that are going to hit the free agent market. They're scheduled to do that. If you're Dave Gettleman, based on your analysis and based on what the new coaching staff sees on film, I mean, do you try to bring back half of them? Or do you completely overhaul the position? That, I think, also obviously changes the outlook of free agency as well as the draft.
I really do think that, you know, Shurmur is putting a lot of confidence in Betcher and his scheme in making this selection. And he is very particular about having athletic, quick guys in his back seven because his entire premise is about fluidity back there. So if you've got three 250-pound linebackers on your roster, guess what? They're not going to play very much because that's not what this guy does with them. You know, he's more interested in linebackers who are going to be 230 and down, maybe even 220.
That can move, yeah.
You know, he doesn't want a 250-pound horse. That's not what he wants to do the kinds of things that he wants to do. You got to take that into consideration. Well, and Dave Gettleman's going to have to look at that and make adjustments in what he might have wanted to do, understanding that Betcher wants guys who run.
Well, to your point, though, that also may mean he may elect to put a third safety on the field.
Again,
as opposed to having an additional linebacker.
It's a thin draft for safeties.
No, but what I guess my point is that he may try to utilize what he has at the safety position currently on the roster and sort of try to transform them into a jack-of-all-trades player.
Well, I'll tell you right now.
Safety slash linebacker.
Depending upon how the secondary shakes out, I could easily see Collins and Thompson and Adams on the field at the same time. I could easily see DRC playing safety. You know, in certain combinations.
I'm with you there.
That's one of the reasons why I believe Dominic Rodgers-Cromartie needs to be on this team. He still has time on his contract, and a lot of people are looking at his number and saying, well, cap-wise, you know, how could they afford to keep him? They can afford to keep him because, A, he's a really good player, and, B, he plays three positions in the secondary.
There's value there, versatility, especially under the new scheme. Let's head back to the phone lines. 201-939-4513 is the telephone number. He's Paul Dottino. I'm Lance Menno. Thanks for tuning in to Wednesday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live. We got Marco in Connecticut. Marco, what's happening?
Hey, guys. How are you?
Hi.
All right, Marco. What do you got for us?
A couple things. You know, as always, I call with a topic, and then I'm on hold, and I'm hearing stuff come up that I thought would be a little more relevant. So I'll try to be quick and then get to my comment about Coach Shurmur. The quarterbacks that are coming out this year, this is just personally, but I think it could really apply to maybe the way we could look at Davis Webb. Davis Webb, to me, is in the pool of the rookie quarterbacks that are going to be drafted this year. And the upper hand that he has and that we have also as Giants fans is that he's in the building. So personally and characteristically, the Giants have a beat on him. Now, skill-wise, I guess there's a beat there. There's a little bit there. But you have to remember that, and I've mentioned this, the quarterbacks coach from the last year, Cignetti, McAdoo, the offensive coordinator whose name is
Mike Sullivan. Yeah.
Sullivan. And then Mark Ross, Jerry Reese are all gone. So for Dave Gettleman and Pat Shurmur, I think when you're looking and evaluating – picking as high as we are, Davis Webb should be lumped into the group of quarterbacks that are coming out. Because if they feel that their skill-wise is someone is better than Webb, I guess, you know, you have to look at the intangibles too, how those guys prepare. You already know how Davis Webb prepares. How they are going to act off the field, you know how Webb is going to act off the field. So I think he's got an upper hand there, but that's just kind of what I'm doing since we haven't seen Webb play. If you guys want to comment on that, feel free to jump in or else I'll keep going.
Well, the one thing that I'll add to what you said, Marco, is I'm with you that he has an upper hand because he's been in the building. But your second point, I think, outweighs your first point in the fact that He's going to have to learn a brand new offense because Pat Shurmur's not necessarily adopting everything that Ben McAdoo had. And like you said, the guys that work the most with Davis Webb, specifically Frank Cignetti Jr., more so than anybody else because he's the quarterback's coach, is no longer in the building. So he now has to get to know a completely new staff. That new staff is going to then formulate its own opinions about him. And also the general manager was not in the building for this entire year to see what Davis Webb did. That doesn't mean that they're not going to do their homework and they're not going to make sure they see from other people that were here what Davis Webb's work ethic was about and so forth. But the advantage that people want to speculate about, I just don't know how much of an advantage it truly is, given the fact that there's all turnover across the board on the coaching staff. And he has to get to know an entirely new coaching staff, just like they need to get to know him. So I almost feel as if your point, the way that I took it, was he's sort of like this new rookie class. Yeah, I would group him in there. He's got more experience than them, but he would come in on the same level in terms of getting to know the coaching staff as any rookie quarterback would have to.
I give you this from Shurmur's press conference. Did you watch it when he was named Giants head coach?
Yes, I did.
Okay. Do you remember the last question was asked, what were your thoughts about Davis Webb when he was eligible for the draft? And his answer was, we went through the process on Davis Webb and we thought he was an outstanding player. That's a direct quote. That's a pretty strong remark. We liked how competitive he was. He's got size. He's got good arm strength. We felt he was a guy worthy of being drafted and having a chance to be a starter someday. Again, beyond that, I don't know much about him. There isn't much tape on him. Yeah. Need to know more. But the initial comments from Shurmur from his time with the Vikings, when he did compile information on this draftable quarterback, was clearly very positive.
Paul, but strategy-wise, wouldn't it be better if Shurmur said almost nothing about
him? I agree. I agree. Right. And that's why I believe him. Because from a strategic perspective, he'd have been better off either saying, I haven't seen anything, I really don't know anything about him, or, you know, what I saw with the Vikings was old, I don't know that it really makes much difference. He'd have been better off not saying anything positive from a strategic standpoint. That would have been the better way to go. But he came right out and was positive about the kid. And that, to me, was of no strategic advantage whatsoever. So it showed me, and again, based on the rest of his press conference, I think we all got a feel that he was very open, very frank, very honest, very giving in his answers. So I have no choice at the moment other than to believe what he said. So he comes into the building feeling like Davis Webb is a legit prospect.
Yeah, and I don't think you have any reason to doubt him. At the same time, though, in fairness, what head coach who just takes over a job is going to criticize a player
is
currently on the roster, though? But I mean, you have to at least take that into consideration.
The easy answer is, I don't know anything about him.
Yeah, he could have said that, but he did. He sort of gave you a combination of both. Because the last statement you read was that I also need to get to know him better as well.
He gave him four compliments first, which he had no business giving him.
No, I get that, but that's because Shurmur admitted to you that during the draft process he did study him. And I don't think there's legitimacy behind that.
Anyway, go ahead.
Yeah.
Well, then let's just stay with this, though. I would say this. For the head coach, he could say that. How about the guy who's picking the players? Do you remember what Gettleman said about him?
Gettleman said he knew nothing.
He knew nothing. Yeah, he was very limited. Yeah.
He knew nothing. Yeah.
Okay. And then if we're thinking about picking the players, I would say that's a strategy-wise, that lines up with what we're saying. I think the beat is, I still think we're in the same place that we could have been. We don't know what he's going to do. But –
yeah, I agree with you. Well, just real quickly, Marco, I mean, if we're going to sit here and read between the lines in terms of what Shurmur and Gettleman said, I still walk away after both of their statements. I don't think any of them gave away more of an indication that the Giants want to take a quarterback at number two.
Well,
I don't walk away.
Shurmur had just gotten here. Yeah. Him and Gettleman have not even, probably even today, have had the conversation about what they're taking.
No, of course, but I guess the point is, if you want to read too much into it and say, oh, well, this is an inkling that they feel really good or really bad about Webb and they have more of a reason
the
to take
only evidence
there's
we
nothing
have.
You could take away from that.
The only evidence we have of the new GM and of the new coach is that the new coach has had good things to say about this kid. That's the only evidence we have from those two people, okay? We also know that Webb's teammates are very, very positive about him, and we know that the scouts who are still in the building are also very positive about him. That much we do know. And by the way, there are a few guys left – quality control, etc., who were in the building and can share with Shurmur some of the information. Quality control coach, Wells is the tight ends coach. He was with the offensive line last year, but he was around Webb. He saw what Webb did. Not everybody got cleaned out, okay? There were some holdovers on the staff. We'll get to them when the Giants officially make those announcements. But it's not like they have nothing. They don't. The fans out there have nothing, because nobody who has not been in this building can tell me they know anything about what Davis Webb is today, first week of February 2018, because you haven't seen him.
This is a discussion that I think could go on for, you know, and it will. It'll go on now until the draft.
It is.
Okay, I'll get to my other thing. My other thing was when you've mentioned about John Mara's comments after Shurmur was hired and talking about what he envisions for the team next year. What I also remember was when Mara saying, he made a comment somewhere that it has been either a trying or disappointing last 5 or 6 years. When he said that, I paused and I just thought about that. And I'm like, man, I'm like, think about that now for a second, because he's not throwing anyone under the bus. But it really has been a challenging 5 or 6 years. And
sure,
lumped in there is this outlier 11-5 playoff season.
Yes.
Now, if you go back to the last few years of Coach Coughlin and then these last years of Coach McAdoo, when I hear the owner say that, it tells me that the Giants are closer to a 3-13 team than an 11-5 team. And I say that because when you're talking about teams like Jacksonville and the Rams and the parity in the league, guys, it is true that the league is set up for you to be able to make a jump from year to year.
Yeah.
However, you cannot do it through free agency. It is set up that if you have good draft picks, then you can make that move. And that's why the Jaguars had top 10 picks every year. But it wasn't until they went out and got a Marone and a Coughlin. And the Rams, the same thing. It wasn't until they got a Sean McVay and a Wade Phillips. Now, I'm hoping that's the case with the Giants and Shurmur, but in my gut, I do think they're closer to a 3-13 year. That I don't want them picking in the top 10 every year, but I think there's real big holes that need to be filled here. So when the owner says his expectations going forward, I think you have to look at that with I think your tempered expectations, because they can only do so much in free agency. Their damage really needs to be done in the draft, and you need to have a head coach that can turn around the draft class, much like Coughlin did in 2007, where all of the draft picks are impacting. And then I think you have a recipe for a team that can make an instant turnaround.
Well, to lessen your concerns, that's why they need to trade the number 2 pick. Okay?
Sure.
Turn that one pick into 4 picks, and that will help you get there quicker.
Guys, I'll take the rest of the
comments. All right, Marco. Appreciate the phone call. I think to Marco's point, you can't achieve your ultimate depth chart with just one of the two facets. You need, ideally, the combination of
sure.
both. You need to achieve it through free agency and the draft. I mean, he was bringing up the Jacksonville Jaguars.
You're missing the third component. Improvement from within.
Of course.
That's got
to
be part of it, too.
Yeah, I mean, to me, that goes without saying. But I'm talking about ways to make roster changes. The two main ones are draft and free agency. So you can't expect
trades
that
don't
in one offseason that you're just going to do it through the draft, or one offseason you're just going to do it through free agency. He was bringing up the Jacksonville Jaguars, how they've had a few years with a top 5 pick. They have. But at the same time, through free agency, they brought in a guy named Calais Campbell, who had an absolute career year, and that can't be overlooked. And they also brought in from the Denver Broncos, after he won the Super Bowl a few years ago, Malik Jackson on the defensive line. So I just named you two defensive linemen that played a huge role on that team this year, Paul, in addition to the draft picks like Jalen Ramsey and like Leonard Fournette and some of these other guys. So you need to do it both ways. You can't just say, well, we're going to emphasize the draft. I would say free agency has to be that complementary component, and that's why Jacksonville made it as far as they did this offseason. It wasn't just necessarily one of the two.
Should we talk about the Minnesota Vikings, who signed Remmers and Reef in the offseason to be
their
bookend tackles?
Yeah.
They drafted a third-round center So they rebuilt three-fifths of their offensive line in 1 year, okay? They brought in, should we talk about the fact that the Florida State running back got hurt?
Dalvin Cook.
But never in a million years did they expect McKinnon, who was a bench player, to suddenly become a big part of what their running game was going to be. I mean, he wasn't going to supposed to be the go-to guy.
Yeah, he was a complimentary guy.
That's
he
it.
Had been on the roster, but then they also brought in Latavius Murray in free agency.
They brought in Murray, thank God, because McKinnon wasn't ready for the whole load, but he wound up becoming a major component with Murray, who came in from the Raiders because the Raiders went and got Marshawn Lynch. They were like, we don't need this guy. He's a throwaway. So, you know, these are significant, significant pieces to the puzzle. And also, let's not forget, Case Keenum came over from the Rams trash heap and wound up being the quarterback who led them deep into the playoffs.
After Bradford got hurt.
So we're talking about, what, six different significant acquisitions to the core of the offense that led them into the postseason. And they all came in during one off season. So I don't, you know, I appreciate what Marco's saying. You're right. It's not easy to do. But to suggest that it can't be done or that it's a real long shot, that's not giving enough credit to the guys who are now in this building who are going to take their best shot at doing it.
The only difference is the Vikings have had a top 10 defense for just about every single season that Mike Zimmer's been the head coach. It was a little bit more continuity, I would argue, in terms of at least one side of the football there compared to what the Giants are looking
at. We do think that the Giants' defense is closer to 16 than it showed in 17. They still have what I think is a formidable secondary, a formidable defensive line, linebackers that do need to be rebuilt. There's no question about that. But two-thirds of this defense, I'd say, still has the amount of talent needed to be a top half, if not top 10 defense in this league.
Well, and they suffered a lot of injuries in 17, so the fully healthy 16 defense didn't necessarily get back on the field in 17, so that has to be taken into consideration as well. Is it impossible for a quick turnaround to happen? No. Is it easy? No. It's ideally the combination of, like I said, free agency of the draft and also your team staying healthy. But I thought, before we get back to the phone call, it was interesting what the last caller said about, was 11-5 in 16 the record? Because you mentioned that the defense that is on this roster is closer to its 16 production.
That was the number one defense
in
the NFC.
I'm not disagreeing with you there, but was 11-5, given how close all of those games were and how the ball bounced their way for a majority of those close games, is when you look at that 11-5 record, was it truly, I guess my point, it wasn't a dominant 11-5 is the argument.
Okay.
If the Giants were really
closer to being the three-win team that they finished at.
But that's not what I'm making here. I'm just saying that you got to look at
the perceptions. You can't even discuss those perceptions because you're never as good as you look and you're never as bad as you look.
So then maybe you're somewhere in between.
You're always going to be somewhere in between.
Yeah.
Just like this three-win team played the world champion Eagles tooth and nail for two full Sunday afternoons. You think the Eagles really believed the Giants were a three-win team after they walked off the field on those two Sundays? I don't think so. So they were not closer to a three-win team then.
Yeah.
They were much closer to being a seven- or eight-win team then.
Well, and
a decent middle-of-the-pack kind of team.
And that's where I'm getting at. That was my main point about the fact that when you win a lot of close games and it takes one defensive stop or one massive offensive play and you're not pulling away from everybody – you at least need to take that into consideration when you evaluate how they got to 11-5. And that's my bigger point here.
Again, never as good as you look, never as bad as you look. And when you have the quicksand of mediocrity that is the NFL, you have a bunch of teams that have double-digit wins that are frauds in effect, and you have a bunch of teams that are probably 4-5-win teams. That may, in fact, be better than what their record indicates. But because there's a 2- or 3-game swing, just because of circumstances, it is what it is. That's why it's the job of the GM and the personnel department to say, okay, as we go into next year, what do we really think of our guys? That's the real issue here.
Be fooled by the record, but look at the personnel.
Yes.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that's what Gettleman said when he got to Carolina and had determined that it wasn't fool's gold. when he got to Carolina, he said they ended the previous season looking like a team that
they
I
went
knew
on a winning streak.
Could
yep.
do something. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't fool's gold, and I believed in them. And look how he did.
Well, and that's the same approach he has to take with this roster.
I get the impression he feels somewhat similar to this Giants team, that there is enough here. They're going to need more tweaks. There's no question they need tweaks. Let's not kid ourselves, folks. They won three games. There's a lot of reasons they won three games. But I get the impression that Gettleman thinks this is doable, or he wouldn't have taken the job.
Scott is in New Mexico. Scott, what's happening?
Hi, guys.
How are you doing, Scott?
Good. Just a personal comment and then two quick questions, which I'll take off the air. The first being, this has to do, this is by my probably eighth or ninth time I've called in, and I just wanted to tell you personally how much I enjoy calling in. My wife thinks I'm addicted now to the show. But you make it fun and you make it interesting.
Thank
and
you.
I think you're underappreciated in a lot of respects. So I just wanted to give a shout out to everybody.
You're very kind.
Appreciate you tuning in.
Two questions that I had. One might be a naive question, but the role of general manager and the role of director of football operations, are they different?
Depends on the team.
Okay, because Tom Coughlin, for example, is director of football operations. Harry Roseman, who's the director of football operations for Philadelphia, which I think was the architect of building that team, he also functioned as a general manager for about 4 years.
You have a lot of different titles. The bottom line is, in each organization, there is one guy who's really going to be in control of the personnel, whether or not it's Jerry Jones, who happens to be the owner of the Cowboys, but his son Steven is like the personnel guy, but Jerry still makes the decisions. He also happens to be the owner. So the titles are just a lot of malarkey. They're nameplates on desks and on walls and on yearbooks and media guides and on doors. The names don't mean a lot. You have to understand the structure of each organization and know who has the hammer. Dave Gettleman has the hammer in this building.
Okay. The other question I had, actually two questions. First one was, there's a quarterback that hasn't really been talked about in the draft, but he threw for over 5,000 yards. He had 37 touchdowns. He had 9 interceptions. And I don't hear his name mentioned as much. He was at the Senior Bowl, but I believe he was hurt. He's the quarterback from Oklahoma State, Mason Rudolph.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted to know if you had any inkling of how he was as a player or why he's not being talked about a little bit more with those kinds of credentials.
Well, I will tell you, I haven't done film work on the QBs yet. All I've seen are the games that I happen to catch in the final month of the season, the All-Star games, you know, very, very preliminary kind of stuff. So I don't want to go deep into this at all, other than to say my understanding is he's on the second tier.
Okay.
I mean, you have to understand a lot of those numbers, and I'm intrigued to see health-wise how he pans out through a variety of tests that are going to be upcoming. You know, he ran an offense, Oklahoma State, over, you know, the last, decades or so that I can remember. I mean, that is a high, prolific offense. So, you know, Scott, when you look at the numbers, you got to just be careful. Well, is that a product of the offense that he's in?
Right.
Or is that a product of his skill set and what he could bring to the other level? And I think that's what some NFL teams are trying to determine. That it's a lot of what they do from a schematic standpoint at Oklahoma State as opposed to what he could then automatically bring to the table on the NFL level.
Right. My last question, and again, I'll take this off the air. I watched almost complete game films of Davis Webb because I really don't know that much about him. And so I watched game films of him against Utah and against UCLA in 2016. And while he had, periods where he looked like he was great. He also had a lot of inconsistency. And Paul, I know you're an advocate for him. You've seen him. Has he improved since that period of time? Because he looked a little weak in a lot of different categories, especially reading the defenses, et cetera, et cetera. So if he's going to be the future, I wanted to make sure that he has shown some improvement.
Sure. And what the Giants will do, they will show the practice films to Gettleman and to Shurmur. What we saw in the limited practice that he was given during the course of the year, of course, we saw him during camp. Then we saw him in the preseason a little bit.
Yeah, correct.
Then we saw a little bit of practice during the year. But what we did see him do was take the route tree and run through it with 200 throws about 3 hours before every kickoff each and every Sunday that the Giants played. Actually, every week. I wouldn't just say Sunday. They played other games too. And we could tell his footwork, his balance, and his accuracy dramatically improved from when he and Frank Cignetti, the quarterback's coach, would do those drills in September all the way through the end of the month, end of the season. I mean, if you saw those tapes, we saw it because we were there. I was on the field with him watching him do it. He was in the press box watching him do it. A marked difference in his accuracy from September to December. And they would just keep throwing the route tree, working on his drop back, working on his balance, working on his footwork. And again, who sees that? Nobody sees that. I saw it. You saw it.
Yeah.
A few people with the Giants saw it, but the gates weren't open to the fans. So nobody else got to see that. And that's the problem when the skeptics want to come to me with moldy film from 2016. And I'm not trying to be funny with you, but that's not the same guy. You know, you're not the same guy you were 2 years ago. Neither am I, neither is Lance. You're different people.
I hope so. I appreciate it. Thank you, guys.
Okay. All right, Scott. Thanks so much for weighing in. Appreciate the phone call. Yeah, we talked about this on a variety of different programs, the fact that he went through a very detailed simulated game before every actual Giants game. And, I mean, they put him through just about every possible different scenario imaginable. I remember, you know, sitting up in the press box and just watching him, you know, go through all those different things with Frank Cignetti. And they had a center usually lining up with him so that he would snap the football.
Yes.
I mean, that was procedure that took place
under game conditions.
Yes, correct.
Because this was before kickoff. Or this is hours before kickoff in the stadium, game conditions. Not in the bubble where everything's perfect.
Yep. All right, that is going to wrap up things for us on today's program. There were some technical difficulties that I've been told in terms of maybe some of you not being able to see the full program, but the archive will be up on Giants.com later today. So whatever you missed, hopefully you'll be able to go back and watch once it's up on our team website. For Paul Dottino, I'm Lance Meadow. Enjoy the rest of your Wednesday right here on Giants.com. Have a good day.